applications for our paid video production fellowships. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feldstein, and Guzder Noreen Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of An Evening with Jeff Cohen on Sunday, June 3rd at 6:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Jeff Cohen is the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, commentator, filmmaker, and author. The evening includes a talk and discussion after the screening of his documentary film, All Governments Lie, which celebrates independent journalists. Again, that's Evening with Jeff Cohen on Sunday, June 3rd at 6:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
We're celebrating KVU's 50th anniversary on June 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society's Outdoor Plaza. Join us for music, fun, special guests, and bring a homemade birthday cake to share and help us celebrate. Bike to the party as part of our Pedal Palooza bike ride. The ride begins at 1 p.m. at KVU, 20 Southeast 8. Come ride your bike from our building to former locations of the radio station and end at the celebratory 50th anniversary of the very day we first switched on our transmitter and began broadcasting to and with the communities of Portland. Again, that's our 50th birthday party on Sunday, June 3rd at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the party and our history can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01 and 29 seconds right there on the dot. Coming up next is your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a major car wreck in Clatskanie claims lives.
Wilsonville Water tests positive for blue algae.
And in international news, Spain's prime minister is kicked out of office.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 1st, 2018. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Annette Newell. Oregon State Police say at least four people are dead and seven more recovering from injuries after a wreck on Highway 30. The wreck this morning at Milepost 76 involved a minivan and a truck, which was hauling a trailer about 14 miles west of Clatskanie. Police say a Honda minivan with eight members of a family was on the way to the beach when the driver made a left turn. A Ford pickup truck towing a horse trailer hit the van. Four members of the family died and four others suffered injuries. The wreck also injured three more people in the truck. Police have not yet said whether the youngest victim, a one-month-old baby, survived the accident. They say they will not release the names of the victims until at least Saturday.
The city of Wilsonville confirms a water sample tested positive for blue-green algae, which is toxic. But though low levels of the toxin were found, the city is not issuing a health alert about its water until it learns the results of another test. Wilsonville has adjusted ozone level in its water treatment plant. Meantime, the city of Salem is coping with water issues after the detection of the blue-green algae in the city's water source. People, including children and pregnant women, are warned to not drink tap water in Salem, but that warning could come to an end by tomorrow. And as people grab bottled water from store shelves, the state's Department of Justice is warning shoppers about price gouging. Nutrients from agricultural runoff may be a contributing factor in the algae's growth in warm months.
According to The Independent and other international news carriers, Spain's Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has been ousted after the country's parliament voted that it has no confidence in his government. Rajoy has been in office since 2011. His removal is on the heels of several corruption scandals that shook his government and led to multiple resignations of ministerial staff. Under the Spanish governmental system, a no-confidence vote must also propose a new prime minister to replace the exiting one. Rajoy's rival, socialist Pedro Sanchez, will take his place after deputies voted 180 to 169 to formally make Sanchez the new leader. Pedro Sanchez's center-left group had the strength of the anti-austerity Podemos group, including a collection of small regional parties supporting the no-confidence vote, which kicked Rajoy from leadership. Several other opposition parties would have been at the ready to oust Rajoy themselves if Rajoy had survived the vote. Center-right liberal party Ciudadanos is one popular group who wanted to have a fresh election to take place immediately. The liberals, who have won noticeable ground in the politics of Spain by opposing Catalonian independence, refused to vote for the motion. They were the only major party to back the Partido Popular, or the People's Party. Speaking of the encroaching no-confidence vote, Rajoy said, quote, "Pedro Sanchez will be the prime minister of the government, and I want to be the first to congratulate him. It has been an honor to be the prime minister of the government of Spain," end of quote. Pedro Sanchez says, "Today, democracy has won. A new era in Spanish politics is beginning."
A neighborhood program called Beaverton Leadership asked participants to commit to a 2-year class that takes them through the history of where they live. Each leadership class focuses on a different but important part of their community. Participants also have to commit to a class project. This year's class project is a special nonprofit event that funds Family Promise of Beaverton. It's this Saturday, June 2nd, at Sunset Presbyterian Church. KBOO's Zelos Marchant spoke to Beaverton Leadership participant Jeremy Van Royce to find out more.
I am speaking with Jeremy Van Royce from Beaverton Leadership about a really great project that is happening. Jeremy, thanks for joining us on KBOO.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So quickly for some backstory, what is Beaverton Leadership and what is the project that is taking place this weekend?
Yeah, it's a good question. Leadership Beaverton is it's a year-long, it's actually a 2-year commitment, but each year a group of people who either work or live in Beaverton that are involved in their community, that are active citizens, they have the option of going through a year-long program. They meet once a month, we meet once a month, and each day that we meet, it's a different day. Like the very first day is Beaverton Day, and you get to cover the history of Beaverton, you know, as far as some of the founding families and where their streets are located and some of the family members that are still there. Economics Day, Government Day, Human Needs Day, we just kind of go through the gamut of what it takes to run a city and all of the different factors that that get played into it.
All right, and so I take it that the project coming up, that's like the annual project that the leadership members get to do.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Every class has a class project that they get to create or participate in, or just a cause. Most of the time it's a socially conscious cause. This year, Beaverton has a new 501c3, a new not-for-profit that is trying to get up and going. It's called Family Promise of Beaverton. So we're putting on a bed race, a fundraiser, an awareness event to kind of bring their presence to Beaverton known, and just kind of highlight the need for what it is that they do. They their mission, their goal is to take homeless families and get them off of the street. And what they'll do is they'll take them through a 13-week rehabilitation process to kind of get them integrated back into a stable living environment.
And what's the name of the nonprofit?
It's called Family Promise of Beaverton.
Okay. What's going on for the event this weekend, and how can people get involved, help bring more awareness to this really, really special project?
Yeah. You know, the event that we've got going on this weekend, it's a bed race. The point is, you know, to put beds on wheels and get teams together and compete on a time trial down a certain distance. The the awareness factor is pretty important. And picking a bed, I think it's kind of symbolic, you know, because when you're dealing with family people, homeless families, you know, everybody deserves a bed. Every child deserves a bed. What people can do to get involved, I'd say at this point, if you wanted to go to their website, www.familypromiseofbeaverton.org, they've got a donation link right next to a race registration. Since the race is tomorrow, maybe some might be kind of tough for people to put a team together and get involved, but they can donate to support the cause. Sponsorship levels, there's twin size sponsorship of around $250, there's full size sponsorship of $500, but all that's listed out on the website.
That's incredible. I didn't know about the bed race. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We got a couple of beds that have been pre-manufactured for us by one of the other members of the Leadership Beaverton, and they've done a really good job. You know, one of the things I think to kind of highlight Family Promise, they haven't actually been up and running for very long. I don't know, maybe a couple of months, and they started out with one family just a little over a month ago, and they've already got five families in their system. So, you know, with the surplus of people moving into the area and the housing is being what it is, you know, I think homelessness for families, it's not a matter of if, but a matter of when, you know, and what can we do as a community to support that? Mm-hmm. You know, what Family Promise is kind of set up and doing is they're taking them through 13 weeks, but that's 13 partners that they have in the community. So 1 week a family will be at one location, and then they'll move them to another partner facility for another week. So the awareness is actually is a pretty big need, in our opinion. And, you know, so we're trying to bring as much highlight to that as possible.
The Joint Office of Homeless Services confirms that a new homeless shelter for men will open next month in Southeast Portland. Multnomah County already owns the brick building that will house the structure. It's on Southeast 122nd Avenue near Madison Street. The temporary homeless shelter could house as many as 125 men and will assign priority to seniors, veterans, and those with disabilities. After meeting with neighbors and police, organizers agreed to build a 7-foot-tall fence around the shelter in July. They also plan to install security cameras.
The bloom is definitely on the rose this weekend in Portland. The Festival of the Flowers has kicked off today and lasts until June 12th. You can head to Pioneer Courthouse Square on Southeast 6th Avenue and take in an eyeful of more than 20,000 flowers. The event is free and open to the public. However, you can pay a bit of money if a bloom catches your fancy and you want to take it home to your garden. The Festival of Flowers has been blooming for 30 years here in Portland.
Today marks the one-year anniversary of Portland and Multnomah County's commitment to transition to 100% clean energy. It was the first commitment of its kind in the Northwest. It's also the one-year anniversary of President Trump's decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Accord. We have the Climate Solutions State Director, Meredith Connolly, on the line to talk about how the Northwest is continuing to achieve progress to make Portland a cleaner energy leader. Hi, Meredith. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
First of all, tell us a little bit about what is clean energy? How do you define that?
Sure. We're really talking about building off of what Oregon already has historically, a lot of hydropower, but then mostly coal and gas in its electricity mix. And as we look to the future, we want to replace all that fossil with renewable energy, deeper energy efficiency. So we're talking a lot more wind, a lot more solar. And then also looking at the city and county have committed us to also transitioning our transportation sector. So we're talking about getting off of gas and internal combustion engines as well.
How close is Portland to being 100% on clean energy?
Well, we know for the state of Oregon a little better than the city of Portland that we are over 50% clean energy already. So we are closer than you would think to getting to 100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
What are some of the strategies in the clean energy resolutions to help Portland to get to the 100% clean energy status goal?
Great. Yeah, so in the electricity sector, a lot of the work will be on getting our utilities to clean up their energy, promote a lot more local energy generation. So we're looking at weatherization, on-roof solar, those kinds of projects to continue to transition us. And so, for example, PGE powers the majority of electricity in Portland. And so as they transition off of fossil fuel, you know, they agreed to get off coal in the coal to clean bill in 2016. But then they also, what we've seen in the last year since this resolution passed, is the city and county supporting community groups pushing them to move off of fracked gas plants as well. So they had proposed a gas plant that they didn't need, and then they did an about face and they embraced building new renewable energy to meet that need instead. And since then, we've seen them planning to build much more renewable energy and continue cleaning up their grid and reducing their greenhouse gases along the way.
How will the resolutions affect big energy users like transportation companies like TriMet?
So TriMet is, you know, having a robust transit service is critical. We want to get people out of cars. We want to get them where they need to go. But TriMet is currently using all diesel fleets of buses to do so, and they're the biggest purchaser of diesel. What this resolution looked at was how do we push them to accelerate to committing to getting to 100% electric buses to power their fleet. And so we've been working with them, and the city and county have been pushing them to figure out how to make that commitment. What we've seen so far is this fall, the first 5 electric buses will be hitting the road here in Portland, and we're incredibly excited about them making a bigger commitment from there.
Meredith, these are really ambitious goals. Do you find that there's support from Northwest coalitions, or does there need to be more support?
This is certainly, these 100% resolutions, I think, really encapsulate what the residents of Portland and the region want. They people of Portland really want clean energy. They want to act on climate, and this, they see this as a blueprint of how to get there. But it will take all of us. These resolutions, to take a step back, you know, we're not just looking at the city operations or the county operations. We're talking about community-wide transitioning to 100% clean energy. So it does take everyone to be a part of that transition.
Are there any plans within the state to use solar in sort of like small areas, like have some of the smaller cities or smaller municipalities or groupings be, you know, have some tax breaks or some incentives to set up a local source of solar power for, say, a community of houses?
There are a few initiatives that are kicking off. There is a community solar program that is starting that the big utilities will be offering. And then we also see local efforts like the coalition of many of our community of color organizations here in Portland are putting forward on the ballot initiative of Portland Clean Energy Fund. And that's hoping to spur many of these community-based renewable projects. I think there will need to be more incentives, more programs that help people afford renewable energy and make it more of a reality along the way.
Okay, thank you so much, Meredith, for joining us today here on KBOO Live. Meredith Connolly is the Climate Solutions State Director, and we'd also like to point out that Edmonds and Bellingham, Washington have joined this movement by making their own 100% clean energy commitments. Ashland, Hood River, Lake Oswego, and Milwaukee, Oregon have passed climate and clean energy plans in the last year.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us today. And for is there one last word you'd like to say for people to take away about this clean energy development?
No, we're just incredibly excited about how much actual concrete action these resolutions have led to in year one, and I think we'll be celebrating these resolutions for many years to come. So thank you for highlighting it and giving everyone a chance to know what our region is doing, especially on the anniversary of Trump pulling out of Paris. We're incredibly excited to see our region leading here.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for KBOO News, and we've been speaking with the State Director of Climate Solutions, Meredith Connolly. Thank you. are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30. At 6, it's Bread and Roses, and at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's weather is partly cloudy, down to 52 degrees, only a 10% chance of rain. We're looking for sunshine on Sunday, with temperatures warming to 83, and we could see some afternoon showers. Lots of things happening on this date in history. In 1990, superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union, signed an agreement to destroy chemical weapons. In 1980, CNN, the world's first 24-hour news TV network, made its debut. And in 1967, the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. The quote of the day is from the former Beatle Paul McCartney, who said about the release, quote, "All that boy stuff, all that screaming, we didn't want it anymore," end quote. The Beatles wanted to be seen as artists rather than just performers, and many critics say that Sgt. Pepper's release changed the direction of pop music as it became more socially conscious. This Sunday, June 3rd, there's a Queersonera happening at the Q Center and marks the 15th anniversary of the Q Center's operation and welcomes the new executive director, Oscar Guerra-Vera, who is also celebrating a 15-year anniversary of when they began their life's calling to activism. KABU's Zelis Ellis-Marchant spoke with Oscar Guerra-Vera earlier this afternoon to find out more.
Thank you for making time to talk to us on KABU. I'm dying to know about the Queersonera happening
yes.
on Sunday, and tell us about it.
Thank you for having us. So essentially, you know, as I'm coming into my executive director role at Q Center, we're honoring the 15th year anniversary date, June 3rd, 2003. Q Center was founded on that day. And so this Sunday, the 3rd of June in 2018, at noon, we're going to be gathering together with community members that are a part of our current affinity groups, our support groups, our queer community. It also happens to be the 15th year I've been organizing in community racial justice, specific organizing that I've been doing, queer justice. And it all kind of just fell together as a incredible theme about, you know, transformation, me growing into this leadership role, the organization navigating its 15th year and kind of going through this internal transformation to really center intersectionality and racial justice, work that's really important here in the Mississippi neighborhood. And so we're just kind of taking a day to like honor the fact that we've been around for 15 years and that we have, you know, a very grounded investment in the next 15 years to include more queer people at multiple intersections.
That's incredibly special. That is just so special that you're having a quinceañera, or queersonera, I should say. And so is Q Center. And of course, kicking off Pride Month, gayest month of the year.
Exactly. And that is that we're kicking off our Pride events. You know, we have a few fundraisers with the Thorns, and we're going to be out at the parade. And so join us for some tacos. Our friends, our good friends, are from Southeast LA, who are queer business owners of Mis Tacones. It's a vegan taco pop-up business, so they're going to be here with us on Sunday at noon. And our other friend owns a popsicle stand, a Mexican popsicle stand, with all these really amazing agua fresca flavors, like mango with chile and tamarind popsicles. So we're, you know, we're going to have a good time with some meals, each other's company. And our friend DJ Adrian is going to be, you know, curating some sounds for the celebration, for sure. So it's going to be a great time.
Oh, it's so delicious. It sounds so delicious.
Right on.
Planning on being
yes,
there for sure.
Is.
How could I not? tell us more about the Pride events coming up that you've
absolutely.
Got in the works.
Yeah, we invite you all to join us. Aside from the Queersonera, today, Friday, June 1st, we're kicking off a few fundraisers with Donnie Vegas, the business on 12th in Alberta in Northeast, the business Fixing Two and Sizzle Pie on Burnside. From now, June 1st till June 17th, the last day of the Pride Day weekend, they're going to be donating proceeds for any Montucky cold snack products that we purchase, beverages and or at these bars or Sizzle Pie. And so please check that out. We also have a Thorns event coming up with Governor Brown. There's a Pride fundraiser with the Thorns Wednesday, June 27th. Check out the Q Center Facebook page for details on purchasing your ticket. You could purchase a ticket with an incredible t-shirt image that we're creating. And also, this is a co-fundraise event with our community coalition partners, Basic Rights Oregon, and a lot of, excited soccer fans to be rooting for the Thorns and their win that day. So please join us for that also the 27th, Wednesday at 7 p.m. And let's see, we also have Bare Bones Bar on 29th and Southeast Belmont, Saturday, June 16th, from noon to 2 a.m., they're also having proceeds go to Q Center for Pride celebration festivities at their business bar in Southeast Belmont. So check some of these places out. We have a series of events coming up that are, our affinity groups are always weekly and biweekly. So check out our groups, also support groups that we have going on, and a few really great community trainings. All of that could be found on our Facebook page as well. These spaces are incredible because I think it's important for us to gather and to find more places in the community to gather. And, also I'm just so grateful that we have community businesses and supporters that see the importance of holding space here at Q Center. And so there's opportunities for y'all to support that way, and just know that, it's helping support our transformational phase of being radically inclusive here at Q Center, with more queer people of color, gender nonconforming individuals, leadership at center, immigrant refugees, people experiencing homelessness, the queer, trans, and gender nonconforming community. We're a very, very diverse community through gender and sexuality identities already, but then also there's more layers and intersecting experiences in our community that we need to center. So by supporting these Pride events, we are, and or also joining us at Q Center, we're supporting this transformation that we're taken very seriously right now.
This is Zelos Marchant for KBOO News.
Reinforcing the belief that money matters more than ideals, the NFL has decided that its players must stand for the national anthem. KBOO's Ray Bodwell has these thoughts.
In a craven display of corporate greed, last week the National Football League knuckled under to Donald Trump, the bully-in-chief, and instituted a policy that players must stand during the national anthem prior to the start of the game. As you may recall, during the NFL preseason of 2016, Colin Kaepernick, then starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, began refusing to stand for the national anthem to protest the, quote, oppression of black people and people of color, end quote. Of particular concern was the continual shooting of black citizens by police. During a post-game interview, he made these comments.
There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
When reporters questioned whether his refusal to stand showed disrespect for the military, he added this.
I have great respect for men and women that have fought for this country. I have family, I have friends that have gone and fought for this country. And they fight for freedom. They fight for the people. They fight for liberty and justice for everyone. And that's not happening.
At first, he simply remained sitting. But then after a lengthy discussion with ex-Army Green Beret and former NFL player Nate Boyer, he decided that in order to show respect for those who have served, he would no longer sit during the anthem, he would kneel. It was Boyer's suggestion, and in a later interview, Boyer himself showed his support of Kaepernick.
I think it's amazing what he's doing, that he's stepping up and he's putting his money where his mouth is.
All this was taking place during the closing months of the presidential election, and Trump quickly distorted the message and used it as a rallying cry for his right-wing base.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
At the end of the 2016-2017 football season, Kaepernick opted out of his contract with the 49ers, who were apparently about to release him anyway, and has been unable to find a job in football ever since. This despite an apparent shortage of skilled starters and backups at his position. However, even with Kaepernick out of the game, players of all races continued to kneel during the anthem, and Trump continued to rail against their supposed un-American behavior. When the NFL announced the rule change that required players to stand, Trump quickly voiced support while continuing to question the patriotism of protesters.
I think it's good. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem. Well, you shouldn't be playing. You shouldn't be there. Maybe you shouldn't be in the country. You have to stand proudly for the national anthem.
He also pretended that he had nothing to do with the decision by the NFL.
I think the people pushed it forward. This was not me. I brought it out. I think the people pushed it forward.
We now know that is typical Trumpian nonsense. On Wednesday, the Wall Street Journal reported that in depositions from NFL owners as part of a grievance case filed by Colin Kaepernick, Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones said that the president personally told him that, quote, "This is a very winning, strong issue for me. Tell everybody you can't win this one," end quote. And so, with $13 billion in annual revenues, the NFL, far and away the world's most profitable professional sports league, caved in. They could have followed the lead of the National Basketball Association, where players, managers, and owners routinely demonstrate their support for oppressed communities and call for social change, but the 32 multimillionaire and billionaire owners decided that their goal